Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Big day for Justin Jefferson a couple days ago, Charles. 4 years, $140 million, $110 million guaranteed. Great day to be Justin Jefferson. Most days are a great day to be Justin Jefferson. Number one, what did you make of that deal, and what do you think this will set up for guys like CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase moving forward?
I mean, it's a great deal to be any player in the NFL, you know, a top-end player who's not a quarterback, because I think it impacts everybody. You know, when you see a wide receiver bump the non-quarterback pay to $35 million a season. And again, remember, this is not a traditionally – I mean, covered the league for 24 years, right? And it's always been you pay four guys, quarterback, elite offensive tackle, elite pass rusher, elite cornerback. Those are the four positions you play. Well, now it's wide receiver. Like, you can go ahead and stick that in that mix. And it's interesting because I kind of looked at the numbers, and by the time – Ayuk's deal comes in, T. Higgins' deal comes in eventually. I know I'm leaving somebody else out of the mix here. Oh, Ja'Marr Chase. You know, when these other deals, CeeDee Lamb. When these deals come in, I think it's like 18 or 19 wide receivers next year, or by the time these deals come in, will be at an annual average value of $22 million or more. Guess how many cornerbacks in the league currently have an AAV of $22 million or more? Zero. So you can go ahead and that big four positions that you pay, you can go ahead and bump corner out of there and put wide receiver in if you're going to keep it at four. But it's going to be five, because now all these corners are going to go, wait a minute, we're the ones out here. we're the man coverage guys. We're the ones, you know, I follow the team's number one wide receiver around the field, or, you know, you use me to set up half of, you know, the defense on the back end. Now you need to pay me, you know, 22, 25, you know, $30 million as a cornerback. It's going to be something that I think raises all boats, and it's a real deal. You know, 4 years, $140 million. It's $111 million guaranteed when you really get into the nitty gritty of it. It's an unbelievable amount of money. And another thing, too, that's interesting is, so teams, there's sort of this rule of thumb that if you have three elite players who are really going to be paid at the top of your salary scale, what you have to try to do, and I don't know if there's any real, like, research why they put the line where they put it, but you will talk to some cap people and they'll say, never pay in any given year your top three salaries. If you have elite players, never let them get beyond 40% of your cap. So that's sort of like this imaginary line. So I went out and I started looking. I thought, okay, the Lions had a big offseason. They signed, you know, Goff, Penei Sewell, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to these huge deals. Let me see the worst intersection of these three deals. It's in 2026. It's like $130.1 million between those three players. Well, when you project out the cap to 2026, this might be a slightly aggressive projection, but there are some projections, in-house projections for teams that think the cap will be about $320 million to $330 million in 2026 because of, you know, some pretty aggressive cap jumps now that new money is kicking in the next couple of years. Well, guess what those three numbers equate to? Like 39.6% in that worst, you know, intersection. So I think that's what some of these teams are starting to look at. Now, like the Vikings, because they have the J.J. McCarthy contract, it helps you to kind of rob Peter to pay Paul. But there are other teams. The Cowboys are going to have to look at that 40% mark. The 49ers are going to have to look at that 40% mark. I don't know what the Eagles are doing. They're paying like a trillion guys. So I'm not exactly sure how the math works in Philly. But it's going to impact a lot of positions and players. And I think the pipeline – of prospects, you know, at lower levels, where if you maybe have a prep player who's like, hey, I'm an elite level cornerback. I'm also potentially an elite level wide receiver, Travis Hunter. What do I want to be at the next level? Do I want to be a wide receiver? Do I want to be a cornerback? Where's the money? If I think I can be an elite level wide receiver, probably want to go and play that rather than play elite level cornerback. Again, Travis Hunter, pay close attention to that kid at Colorado. And I thought of Joe too, because we talked about DeAndre Hopkins. I think a deal like this is going to take some teams out of the running. If like Ayuk and Higgins hit free agency next year, I think there are going to be some teams that tap out and go, we don't want to do this. We don't want to get into this, or we can't afford because we've got other guys to pay to get into this sort of arms race for these second-tier wide receivers. Let's go patch it up with one of these guys that's 30-plus years old, who's a free agent next offseason, and sign a 1 or 2 year deal. So I think it'll actually help even some of these aging guys that are going to be in the mix in free agency offseason. And as Joe said last week, I'm like, maybe you do want to try to get ahead of Hopkins if you think he's got a year or two left.
So, yeah, no, interesting discussion on the cap. You know, sometimes you forget the teams pay like hundreds of thousands, maybe seven figures in some cases to their capologists, right?
Yeah.
To figure this stuff out. It's almost like people who talk about the cap being fake or sound like total idiots. But I did have a quick question for you on the upcoming deals, because I personally think Jefferson's the best receiver. That doesn't necessarily mean the next guy, if the next guy's close to him, won't get more. Do you think that Lamb and Chase will be a tick ahead of his deal just because theirs come later?
I think Chase will best this deal. I really do. Because I think that, you know, now injuries and you know, look, Jefferson had an injury last year, Jamar Chase has suffered an injury, but I think both teams value them the same way, that they set the table for a large majority of their offense. And you know, basically they won't come out and say it, but part of what teams are paying for too with some of these guys, and I think in particular a guy like Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, you're paying to never see single high safety, okay, ever. Like you're never going to see a situation where you're basically facing a defense and there's only one safety back there. You're affecting the running game. You're affecting your quarterback. And I think that's part of how wide receiver became one of the positions that you pay, at least when it's an elite guy, is because of the multitude of positions you're affecting. I think Chase falls into that. I think CeeDee Lamb's pretty close. So I think CeeDee Lamb will get close to the Jefferson deal. I'd be surprised if he surpassed it, because I think what the Cowboys are going to try to do here, and they could completely fail at this, and that's probably what's gotten them into a little bit of trouble, is I think they're going to try to go to Dak Prescott. They're going to try to go to Micah Parsons. They're going to try to go to CeeDee Lamb and say, look, we're going to pay all you guys, and we're going to try to get you as close as we can to being the highest paid at your position. But help us out here, and don't be the highest paid at your position. If Mike is willing to do this, if CD's willing to do this, if Dak's willing to do this, we're basically all coming together and saying, hey, we're going to leave a little bit on the table, take a tiny home team discount, or give a tiny home team discount, and that's going to help us maintain, you know, this structure moving forward. You know, the Cowboys this offseason have spent almost nothing in this offseason. I think they're dead last in the league in spending. I think it's like $90 million total. I mean, it's unbelievable. But supposedly, the reason why they're doing this is because they're trying to set this up right now with these three guys. And so that's why I think if they can get CeeDee Lamb to take less, just a little less than Jefferson. So let's say by the time their rotation comes out, Jamar Chase is one, Jefferson's two, CeeDee Lamb's three, and they're separated by, say, $1 million AAV. That gives the Cowboys the ability to then go to Dak, go, look, you know, work with us here. We're trying to pay, man. We're trying to give you a ton of money. But just, you know, try to work with us and help us keep this in line in terms of the salary structure moving forward. So, but yeah, I do think those three guys, and look, Joe, you and I know how agents operate. They're going to sit there and go, if we're close to being at the top of the heap from a wide receiver standpoint, just we want that. Give us a dollar more.
Yes.
Like make us the highest paid. Figure out a way to do this, and maybe you smudge the numbers a little bit, you know, from a guaranteed standpoint, or throw something else in to try to make it happen. That to me, I think, would be a little bit of a sticking point with the Cowboys with Lamb. And by the way, he's probably considered by that organization the quote-unquote easiest guy to sign before next season kicks off.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rextro. So, Charles, you have Jim Harbaugh winning a national championship in Michigan and then bolting to the NFL to go coach the Chargers. And now, as of this morning, reports out there that potentially Dan Hurley of UConn, who's won back-to-back titles, could be going to the NBA to coach the LA Lakers. How do you kind of view the way that the college landscape is shifting here in terms of the coaching part of this, how that could impact things moving forward here, and the idea that guys at the top of their profession right now winning national championships are still leaving the college game potentially and bolting to the professional leagues?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if this happens, if Hurley leaves, it'd be the first time you saw the college football national champion head coach and college basketball national champion head coach leave, you know, in like, what, a six-month period, you know, from each other, a five-month period from each other. I think to me it speaks to what a lot of people are hearing on the NFL level. A lot of reporters are hearing, a lot of, you know, coaches and general managers. You have this influx of coaches who want to get out of college right now because of what is happening with NIL. I mean, Saban, he split. He left because he didn't want to deal with, you know, the transfer portal, the constant need to recruit players back repeatedly, you know, dealing with the opaque nature of how this is all going to be settled in terms of how will athletes now be paid by colleges to be players versus, you know, what is the legality of, you know, different kinds of NIL money. I mean, college sports is a complete mess right now. It's a total train wreck. And I think you just have – there's so much uncertainty and pressure on staffs now year-round that you just have, you know, coaches who I think don't necessarily want to deal with this. I'm not saying that's why Dan Hurley would leave and go to the Lakers, but – I do think it has factored, you know, Harbaugh. There were obviously other extenuating circumstances as well. There were problems, you know, with certain individuals inside Michigan who are making it a hard time to get him a contract extension. Plus you had the NCAA, you know, looking at the whole, you know, taping of signals stuff. And so, you know, do I think that played into it? Sure. But there's no doubt in my mind that Saban left because of where things were going. Tom Izzo, you know, I don't know if Joe had heard this, but recently, Tom Izzo was basically like, yeah, I can kind of see the end for me. You know, like he doesn't want to deal with it either. You know, and so I wonder if the trend that we're going to keep seeing is just more and more, from the NFL standpoint, more and more coaches who are getting calls from people at the college level saying, hey, I don't want to be here. I don't like coaching these kids, you know, because of how NIL is starting to change the matrix. And the NFL is worried about this too, because they feel like they're starting to see a wave. You're starting next year. You know, like I talked to a couple executives about this. They're like, we're going to start next year getting mostly people who have been paid at the lower level. And we're wondering how that's going to change. Like, what are they willing to do now when they come into it? Are we going to get guys who are like, I don't want to play special teams? Are we going to get guys to say, I'm already professionalized coming in? Is there going to be more of, you know, in the draft run up, I'm just not going to do anything that would hurt my draft stock. I think, you know, Braylon Allen not running the 40 yard dash coming out of Wisconsin, not doing any of the agility drills and sort of blaming it on injury that nobody really believed. And like there's a thought process that it's going to get a lot harder at the college ranks, but that eventually is going to leak over to the NFL, where they're going to have to change their mindset when it comes to, look, you can, I guess you would say like player empowerment and what they're willing to, put up with when they're starting to go through their process coming into the next level. So
that sounds a little bit like excessive whining to me, sort of like I hear from some college coaches, you know, in terms of like guys getting paid. But I understand it. I do. It's interesting because I do think that they're, well, eventually going to have to figure this out in terms of like contracts, and so you don't have like guys switching schools every, which I think that it will stabilize things with some coaches, but I don't think there's any question. You know, like a lot of these guys have gotten out of it. Yeah, I keep waiting for Izzo I think, you know, I think he wants to take one more run at trying to win a championship. But, you know, we talk here about even like college baseball coach Tim Corbin. I mean, some of these guys who are just a totally different landscape. It also, Charles, you know, the quality of, because of NIL, keeping, you know, good college players who aren't necessarily great pro prospects, but maybe they're like lower round picks. I mean,
right.
In school, I mean, like the lower rounds of the draft, it looks like that's going to just be weaker now, right?
Well, I mean, you can look at it two ways. Okay. And I do think you can have, sometimes you could have guys who go, you know, hey, I got an agent in my ear telling me, like, get your free agency stop, you know, clock started. Just go if you'll be a fourth round pick, whatever. Now, you could have some of those guys, particularly, let's say, even though it feels like we're going to see far and far less like redshirt sophomores in college football. Now everybody's going to play. But you're going to see some of these guys who could probably use another year of development, who might be a middle round pick or maybe even a late round pick, who stay for NIL money, which could be good for the NFL because a player stays in college and develops another year, right? Develops physically, develops more as a player, matures more as a person in college, which can be good for the NFL. And I also think the portal, you know, look, you're seeing quarterbacks that in the past, and I think we talked about this on the show before, maybe Jaden Daniels is not an NFL player right now. If this happens, his career happens 15 years ago, maybe, you know, I mean, go ahead and look at all the transfer portal. Michael Penix, you know, another guy. Like, it's, I think the portal's offered an opportunity, particularly from the quarterback standpoint, Bo Nix, for players who slam into a wall, particularly quarterbacks, in a program, who now can change, find another situation, and some may even go to a third, right? And find the situation that clicks, and then they can develop an NFL skill set in a certain style of an offense, which is good for the NFL because it gives – there's more viability to quarterbacks on the college level now to find success. A Riley Leonard, you know, who enters the portal, and now people are sort of saying – like when I ask teams, like, okay, next year's quarterback class looks like it's going to stink. And they're like, all right, well, let's wait. Let's wait and see, because there's some quarterbacks that are switching teams. Now, let's see how that affects, you know, their horizon when they land, you know, in a place that maybe is a little more suited for a restart. Like Nix, I don't think there's any question when you look at his situation. He needed to change the scenery.
Yes.
It was just not going to work at Auburn. I think mentally, it had a lot to do mentally with him, how he went into the program and did not have that instantaneous success. And then I think once he got to Oregon, it was an offense much more suited to what his skill set was. And it gave him a mental, like when you talk to people in Denver, they're like, he just needed a fresh start. He needed to be away from everything that had kind of gone into that commitment at Oregon. And he got himself right. And he went into an offense that suited Sean Payton's play style. Right. And so that made him worth a first round pick to the Denver Broncos. You know, 15 years ago, that never would have happened. Right. He probably would have been stuck at Auburn. He would have potentially transferred, had to sit out a season. Who knows, with, you know, stops and starts, how that looks for him. And then maybe he's a late round pick and never really has traction on the NFL level. So it goes both ways. You could get some kids that stay and weaken the later rounds of the draft. You could also get some kids that stay, become better players, and then come back a year later and you know, teams are more enticed by their skill set at 22 than they would have been at 21.
So, Charles, it's taking into account everything we've seen to this point in the offseason. Obviously, Kansas City, San Francisco, the Super Bowl matchup last year. Are you convinced it's still Kansas City the favorite in the AFC, San Francisco the favorite in the NFC? Has your viewpoint on that changed? How do you view how things have gone this offseason and how that influences the top of each conference?
Don't be a Lions owner.
I mean,
maybe
should. I do like the Lions. Okay. I was at that game in the NFC title game, and I sat there and I watched a team that to me should have been in the Super Bowl had it not been, you know, Josh Reynolds catches a pass, Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't fumble. they take a field goal instead of going for it on fourth. There's just like a couple of decisions where it's like, if only one of those goes the other way, maybe the Lions are in the Super Bowl last year. I think they did everything they could this offseason to pay the guys they needed to pay. I think they're a better team. Even losing, you know, Cam Sutton, I still think, you know, the talent they picked up in the draft at cornerback, although it's a little dicey playing rookie corners, starting them. You know, I do think the talent level got better, especially on defense for the Lions. But that said, it's hard to not look at Kansas City. You know, it's not like they were – it's not like they didn't suffer losses in the offseason, but it's hard to look at them and not feel like they weathered a year last year where things were a little shaky and they come out of it on the other side, hopefully offensively. Well, now let's see what happens with Rashee Rice. I mean, there's definitely been enough offseason incidents to be a little nervous. You know, just, but coming out of the gate, come on, these are the most talented veteran laden teams and they have talent at the positions that matter. They have some guys that are playing for contracts, which is good. You know, it stacks up for, you know, to me out of the gate, those two Super Bowl teams should be right in the mix. It's just kind of like who's going to fill in the second tier below them. And I hate putting Detroit in that mix because what do? Every year we have this bias where we look at the best teams from the year before and we go, okay, well, they're obviously going to be back next year. And that doesn't always work out. And by the way, Jason Fitz, who obviously, you know, works with us. And you guys know what Jason Fitz is. Jason, we were doing a podcast yesterday. And he mentioned something that kind of blew my mind. And he said he had done some work at ESPN when he was at ESPN with stats and info there. And they came up, I think it was like this 10-year period, or it might have been even longer, where no team, only Rob Gronkowski accounted for the one player where a team was paying someone at the very top of their position and won a Super Bowl that year. He swears the stat is true.
Wow.
That was like this like 10-year block where no team had won a Super Bowl where they were paying a starter at the very top of their position. And I was like, no quarterback in that period was the highest paid player in the league? He was like, nope. And he said ESPN Stats and Info went through all of it, and they could only find Rob Gronkowski as accounting for the highest paid player at his position and the Patriots winning a Super Bowl in that year. And so I said to Fitz, I was like, couldn't we kind of gamble based on that piece of information? I was like, let's go. Let's wait until the Monday of kickoff, right? And then let's go down the list. Who's the top paid player at every single position? Let's take their team off, you know, the Super Bowl, and then let's find out who's left. I think it's a fascinating case study. Fitz swears it's true. We don't have a Yahoo Sports Stats and Info, so Fitz became the Yahoo Sports Stats and Info yesterday. But that to me was kind of
Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald wasn't the highest paid defensive tackle when they won it all.
He was not when they won the Super Bowl. No, he wasn't. Mm-mm.
Boy, that seems wild.
And that's why he threatened the retirement. Remember the whole like, oh, he could retire after the season, and like it was so obvious that he was clearly making a play to get, you know, to get a salary bump, and he did. He got a couple years of huge money coming out. That's when he went into the $30 million range. But no, he was not the highest paid player at his position the year that they won the Super Bowl.
That's amazing. I thought you were going to say Fitz blew my mind and said the Raiders are winning the Super Bowl this year.
I don't even – the second he gets in the Raiders, I just stop listening. I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm going to tune this out and move on. I like too much hair gel, Fitz, to maintain that fin on your head.
That's right.
Soaked into your brain.
That's right. That point. Charles, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next week.
Absolutely appreciate it, guys. Have a good morning.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. I got some tickets to give away, a 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on Louisville tonight at First Horizon Park. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025. We'll win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on Louisville at First Horizon Park coming up tonight, 615-737-1025. Thanks to Charles Robinson for being with us. So, Joe, it looks like Dan Hurley from UConn, who has won back-to-back national titles with the men's basketball team, could become the next head coach of the LA Lakers. Woj reporting this morning on ESPN that the Lakers are aggressively pursuing him to be the next coach. So let's get on the hypothetical train for a second and say that happens. That means you would have Jim Harbaugh winning a national title at Michigan with football back in January, bolting to go to the NFL. Now, granted, Harbaugh has kind of been flirting with the NFL for a few years now, but he did. He leaves. College football goes to the NFL this season. And then if this happens, Hurley going from a two-time champion in UConn in college basketball to the LA Lakers, if this comes to fruition here, what do you read into that? Is that a commentary on the state of college coaching right now? Is it just opportunities that were too good to pass up, getting back into the pro game? How do you view these potential moves, one that's already happened with Harbaugh, another one that might happen with Hurley, and what that means for the state of coaching in college athletics?
Yeah, there may be a rant brewing here, because what you see when anything like this happens is you see immediately all this reaction like, oh, the state of college sports is driving all these coaches out. And then you see college sports media in general immediately dunk on every one of them. Now, Harbaugh, you bring up, that is a little different. Of course, there's nuance and there are different individual situations. I'm seeing people say, it's the Lakers. Fine. But college sports media, if you're going to completely just dismiss in general the idea that the state of college athletics isn't a factor in general in some of this migration, I mean, your head's in the sand. Come on.
Yeah.
Yes, Harbaugh is a guy who was in the NFL, I think always was destined to return to the NFL. And I think his situation also, look, he tried to get out and he couldn't get the Vikings job, for example, right? I mean, he tried to get out earlier, and I think he had some, you know, maybe some bitterness because Michigan cut his pay, and then, of course, they quickly restored it, all that stuff. Okay, so you can look at different situations and say no, but, like, I mean, I think what Nick Saban said speaks for a lot of people. I think Jay Wright has said some things that speak for a lot of people, which is once it becomes that you have to re-recruit your own team, it just becomes difficult. This doesn't have to become, you know, these players shouldn't get any money and I'm out of here. I mean, I guess like a guy like Dabo sounds like that. He's still coaching in college, and good luck to him with the way he's going about things. But absolutely, this is a factor in general. I talked to a college coach. It's funny, or a former college coach. I'm not going to name him because, you know, we were just having a conversation, but he has been a coach, and he was kind of between jobs, and I asked him like what the plan is. He's like, well, I'm trying to anything but college football.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get to the NFL. Come on. I mean, of course this is a factor. It's already, to me, way more attractive to be an NFL coach than a college coach. Yes, you have crazy hours during the season, and it's still a very decided lack of life balance. So before all this stuff, recruiting is constantly on your mind as a college coach. When you add to that recruiting your own players and not even really being able to project ahead the stability of your own roster, how is that not something that tears at you emotionally and psychologically? Come on.
Well, this is again an example of if you could just find a way in college athletics right now to get the transfer portal part of this figured out, it would solve a lot of issues.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, exactly. And we've talked about this before, I don't really think there are that many people out there that actually care about the players getting paid. Like, I don't think people really actually care about how much money a college player is making at the end of the day. They do care about the transfer portal, and they do care about, are the players that I'm rooting for now going to be a part of this team next year? And if not, like, what's the movement look like? We talked about that in college basketball. It's hard to get invested in terms of, you have no idea whether or not the player is going to be there next year. The Zakai Zieglers of the world are hard to find right now in college sports, all those things. This is yet another example of, like, from a coaching standpoint, you get the transfer portal part of this figured out and it becomes contractual labor at some point, then that solves a lot of problems in the current landscape of college sports.
Right. Like the salaries, I mean, people care, you know, if Nico stinks, then there's going to be some Tennessee fans that say, we paid him how much, right? I mean, you have that element of it. But again, you could go back in over time and you just didn't know how much the boosters paid your star player who didn't perform, but yeah. So you didn't have that to complain about, you know. So I'm with you. And honestly, anybody who's still complaining about players getting paid or, you know, they get free school, I mean, yeah, please. Like, that's not even a relevant discussion. But, yeah, look, it's the way that they mirror the coaches is by having to pay for moving, because coaches do have to pay for moving. They have contracts with buyouts. So how that looks, I mean, there are things that are going to happen that I just can't possibly project right now. But, man, it's absolutely a mess. And if I'm someone, you know, if I'm a position coach in college football looking at this, one, I'm hoping that the stability does come around and that down the road, you know, it will even out some and you know, you're not going to have this constant turmoil. But I am looking at the NFL, you know. I mean, you'll be a quality control coach. It's like, I think they call them, oh gosh, it's like 30-30-30 guys, but I forget what it means. But it's like the quality control, they work like dogs in the NFL. They get no money,
yeah.
You know, and all that stuff. But look, it's just like in college sports, if you want to be a coach, you're going to be a GA for a couple of years and get a stipend of like $800 a month to live on, you know? So, but then at least in the pros, you have some time where maybe you can have time to yourself and have some level of life balance.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the movement in college sports right now. Again, UConn's Dan Hurley could be named the next head coach of the LA Lakers. That is certainly the Lakers target, according to Woj from ESPN. More on that coming up next. Final thoughts on day three coming up of Tennessee Titans minicamp. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Sean on the text line says, "Gents, currently on a flight back from Amsterdam, and I have to say I love technology that allows me to hear you guys while flying across the pond. Keep up the great work." Robbie and Rexford, as we know, Joe, very popular program in Amsterdam.
Yeah, well, this program is probably best listened to while still feeling the effects of Amsterdam. So hope you had a good time. You know, just like Kaharski loves to do.
Yeah. Big promoter of the recreational activities. Kyle on the text line says, "I think the major pushback on the NIL front from coaches is more about the mentality of the player, not them actually being compensated. If all the kid cares about is the paycheck, it's mighty hard to get him motivated as a coach." This from Kyle on the text line. An interesting point.
First of all, yeah, that's a good point. First of all, Nick, that was a total gimme for Nick to slam dunk and do the Kaharski drop.
It was.
I mean, I just absolutely lobbed it to you at the rim.
Judging by his face right now, I don't think there's much listening going on.
That scares me. Is he okay?
Oh, he's back now. He's back now.
Okay.
We in there? We good?
Yes. What do you need, Joe?
Oh, okay. So he wasn't listening at the time.
I lobbed you the Kuharski drop, man. I lobbed it to you.
He did.
Dunk. Dunk
weed
for us.
Constantly.
There it is.
There we go.
A minute and a half too late, but beautiful. There it is.
No, Kyle, that minute run.
Yes, all the hits. Let's play. Right. I think we've added some hits on the program and the station this week.
He's measuring cheek size.
I think so. It just keeps coming. I got a texture.
Let me address Kyle real quick.
Okay,
I talked to a coach recently about that, and there's no doubt. And it's like, this is where, on the side of the players, I will scream this forever and ever. I've been arguing this long before NIL became a reality. Almost none of these kids are going to make significant money as professional athletes. Almost none of them. A very tiny, tiny percentage of them. Obviously, you're motivated if you're a high-level college athlete to try to do that, but it's a very low chance. There are a lot more guys who are good enough in college athletics for prominent programs with huge audiences and huge fan bases to make that money, seed money for your life in college, and that's why they should be allowed to do so. That said, if all you're worried about is like that money, your NIL money or whatever, and you're not as hungry as you were to be great in the pros and to push yourself and to get an education, that money's not going to be enough.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, that's where just kids are dumb. Like I say it, speaking of like, you know, having fun in Amsterdam, like I would have been so stupid when I was 19. I mean, like, you know, so like they do need guidance and they do need like, they need coaching and mentoring, and they do need to at times stick it out at a place where it doesn't go immediately their way, because it actually will help them in life. And so in some ways I'm on the side of the coaches who say these things, but you have to find a way to make this work. And you know, that's where like adults have to help kids.
Yeah, that's a great point. I got a texter that says, I wish Levis would have stayed on the college team where he couldn't be more than a backup. That way he probably wouldn't have been drafted, and we wouldn't have to deal with this sham of a quarterback and pretending he's good. So we've got Malik Willis catching strays today on the text line, and now Will Levis, who did not throw the ball in the lake. It bounced into the lake, as we previously pointed out on the show today, catching strays on the text line as well.
Yeah, wow. You never know. There have been some serious just out-of-nowhere shots at people. My goodness. But, hey.
What's the worst thing in sports this week? Malik Willis. Malik Willis is terrible. Okay.
Malik Willis is, yeah, I'm really, really mad at him for no apparent reason. Yeah.
Jake Locker.
It's been an interesting week on the text line and in life,
Jordan,
in general.
Love.
Thank you. I smoke weed constantly.
Yes, yes, yes. Rex Road Day 3 of Titans Minicamp coming up today. God. Mercifully, it is coming to an end. What are we looking for today? As you look at what's gone down on the field to this point, what has stood out to you the most about what you've seen through Titans Minicamp?
It does feel like, and look, it's a new coach, new system, things like that. There's more, it's a little more individual-based than team competitive-based than the previous staff.
Yeah.
I hate doing the comparisons of the previous staff. You know, we know all about the correcting mistakes, not correcting mistakes, discourse and all that stuff. So, like, so far it's been limited, but maybe today is a heavier day in that regard in terms of, you know, getting some work done, you know, with team stuff. But, you know, look, what you can see that really matters here is, you know, you do have pass rushers lining up over tackles, and so they're still trying to move their feet and stay in front of them and things like that. But it's coverage, it's routes, it's coverage, and it's passes. I mean, that's really all that is remotely relevant to the actual game of football. So I guess I'm going to see if Will Levis can save his season today and bounce back with a big day. Because if not, in this mini camp of mini camps, what does it all mean?
Little Amy Adams Strunk out there today. Now, Will, we need you to keep the football out of the water, please. We don't have a limited supply of footballs. You can't throw them in the water.
You're very underrated, Amy Adams Strunk impersonation. By the way, you know, there were a lot of people on the owner's balcony. So she might have been watching. I couldn't tell. I kind of looked up there. There were a bunch of people. So it's possible she was actually there checking it out. And immediately phoning Rand Carthon to cut Levis after he soared the Uncle Rico pass into the water.
Rand,
for Jared.
The ball's in the water. How did that happen from the starting quarterback? Oh, God.
In the lake that I thought was a pond.
Yeah, I love minicamp. I mean, it's June 6th. What a great time of year where there's a week in between the NBA Finals, which, by the way, starts tonight, and the Stanley Cup Finals, and then you got football drills and 7-on-7s to obsess over, as we've done today. It's really good stuff.
Dennis is right. The biggest stray this week was, why so bald and fat?
Yeah, we did catch a big stray earlier this week. Why are you guys fat and bald? Thanks. Appreciate it.
Man.
Who you got game one tonight between the Celtics and Mavs?
I'll go Mavs. I'm biased. I hate the Boston Celtics. They're among the most hated sports outfits of my life, and that'll never change. I really don't hate their players. I just hate them.
Yeah.
I hate, like, their stupid fans, like stupid what's-his-name, Dave Portnoy.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him be miserable. So I'm rooting hard for the Mavs, even though also I'm not a huge Kyrie fan. But I think the Mavs will win game one. I think the Celtics are probably destined to win the thing. I hope I'm wrong, though.
Celtics by 15 tonight. That's going to do it for us today on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Jason Big Joe up next. This is 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.